Israel keeps pounding the Gaza Strip for a fourth straight day, striking positions across the Palestinian territory. Pakistan tightens security as a detained former Prime Minister Imran Khan arrives at a court in Islamabad. And the Biden administration comes under fire over its new immigration rules that makes it difficult to seek asylum in the U.S. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumisha Ahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. The death toll from Israel's strikes on the Gaza Strip grows as the regime keeps bombarding the besieged Palestinian territory for a fourth straight day. The latest Israeli airstrikes have hit areas in the central and southern Gaza Strip. So far, 31 Palestinians, including civilians, have been killed. The latest victim is a young man who succumbed to injuries he sustained on Thursday. Resistance groups, including Islamic Jihad, have responded by firing missiles and rockets into Israeli settlements. One Israeli has died and nearly 60 others have been injured as a result. That, according to Israeli media reports, Palestinians say the retaliatory attacks will continue until Israel stops its policy of assassinating resistance leaders. Hamas, meanwhile, has said that the silence of the international community emboldens Israel to continue its aggression. The former Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan has just appeared in court following his arrest earlier this week. Security has been tightened outside the court as Imran Khan arrived there. Police have also imposed an emergency order banning gatherings. This comes as Khan's supporters plan to march to the capital, Islamabad, from across the country later in the day. The former prime minister was arrested on Tuesday on corruption charges that sparked deadly clashes between Khan's supporters and police in different cities. At least 10 people were killed as a result. Nearly 2,000 were arrested as well. On Thursday, Pakistan's chief justice ruled that Khan's arrest was unlawful and the whole process needs to be backtracked. The government has said that it will rearrest Khan if he is released. Our correspondent Nasser Kazmi in Islamabad explains why the Pakistani government and the judiciary are divided over the legal challenges against Imran Khan.
The government is blaming the judiciary that the judiciary is favoring Imran Khan. Whenever he filed any petition in the court, he is getting relief from the court. So we have seen different statements from the ruling Pakistan Muslim League Nawaz. They are insisting that the Supreme Court of Pakistan as well as the higher courts of the country are favoring Imran Khan. They are giving relief to Imran Khan. This is a very interesting situation. Now, the government insists that if there is a different method for Imran Khan, so this method should be used for their leader, the exiled leader of the former two-time Prime Minister, Mia Muhammad Nawaz Sharif, who is in London. So he is also facing the similar charges of corruption as the Imran Khan is facing at the moment. So the point of the government is at the moment that if the courts are giving relief to the Imran Khan, so this relief should be given to Nawaz Sharif similarly. So we have seen that from last 3 days, there have been violent protests all across Pakistan. However, yesterday, Imran Khan announced that these violent protests should be stopped immediately.
Immigration advocates have filed a legal challenge against the U.S. administration rule that restricts access to asylum at the border with Mexico. The advocates are represented by the American Civil Liberties Union. They file a motion before a federal judge in California. and aims to reopen an existing lawsuit over similar restrictions implemented by former President Donald Trump. The motion also aims to update the case to target the new regulation issued by incumbent President Joe Biden. The new rule is part of Biden's policies to address a possible rise in the number of immigrants to the U.S. That comes as COVID curbs, known as Title 42, ended at midnight on Thursday. Tens of thousands of migrants have already crossed the U.S.-Mexico border. Washington says it wants to curtail illegal immigration. Rights groups, however, say the policies violate human rights. Now, as we mentioned before, the death toll from Israel's strikes on the Gaza Strip is growing as the regime continues bombarding the besieged Palestinian territory for a fourth straight day. Our correspondent, Ashraf Shannon, is joining us right now live to give us some updates on the situation. Ashraf, what is the latest?
20 to 25 minutes, Islamic Jihad and the resistance have fired more than a dozen rockets towards Tel Aviv and Al-Quds. At least one rocket landed in the area of Beit Shemesh, close to Al-Quds. Another rocket landed in the Gosh Etzion settlement, Israeli settlement compound in Bethlehem. This while Israeli fighter jets pounded northern Gaza and southern Gaza minutes after the launch of the volley of rockets from Gaza. There's been talk about truce in the media, but nothing on the ground. As between 3 a.m. and around 7 a.m., things were sort of calm, but after that, the situation started to escalate with Israeli tanks shelling areas in southern Gaza and east of Gaza, and Palestinian resistance factions, the Islamic Jihad's military wing, the Al-Quds brigades, firing mortars. And about half an hour ago, 25 minutes ago, they started firing rockets aimed at Tel Aviv and Al-Quds. Since the start of this Israeli onslaught 4 days ago, that started with the assassination of top commanders from the Islamic Jihad's military wing, along with their families, including women and children, that the total number of deaths in Gaza has reached 31, and around 100 others were injured. Among them. At least two dozen who suffered critical injuries, including children. The situation is extremely tense in Gaza. For example, yesterday it was almost like a curfew in Gaza. Stores did not open, as well as schools did not open. Nothing was happening in Gaza yesterday except for the bombings and the firing of rockets. Right now, people headed to attend the Friday prayers. And even for the Friday prayers, there were instructions to all resistance fighters and resistance commanders not to attend any public Friday prayers or even to go to the mosque because of the risk of mosques being bombed by Israeli fighter jets.
Thank you very much. That was Ashraf Shannon, our correspondent in Gaza City, with the latest. Ashraf, please stand by as we bring in two other guests to discuss the situation that has escalated in the Gaza Strip over the past 4 days. Tim Anderson, director of the Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies, is joining us from Beirut, and Syed Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator, is with us from Islamabad. Mr. Anderson, of course, we did see an escalation of tensions since the beginning of the year, but did you think that it would lead to the situation we are in right now?
Well, unfortunately, the attacks on Gaza have been regular, semi-regular over the years. We know that these racialized attacks based on a racial Zionist ideology where they say they're going for resistance fighters, but independent sources show that they typically at least three-quarters civilians that they're killing. It seems to be a distraction move by the Netanyahu regime from the internal conflict that's going on. There's serious divisions amongst the Zionists themselves, and it seems to be an attempt by Netanyahu to try some traditional tactics, murdering Palestinian civilians in Gaza, and distract attention from his own problems with the courts.
So, Mr. Anderson, you did mention that this is a way to deviate attention from the internal problems that Israel has. The Gazans, Palestinians in general, are paying the price for that as Israel tries to deviate attention from its internal problems. But on the other hand, we have the international community, which has remained silent, particularly over the past 4 days during these intensified attacks on the besieged Gaza Strip, which is rightfully described as an open-air prison.
Yes, this is one of the features of the massacre, the racial massacres carried out by the Israelis, that the Western states that shout the loudest about human rights when it suits them in their particular areas are entirely silent here. And of course, they are also providing finance and weapons and other sorts of comfort in the media to the Israeli regime.
So, Mr. Abbas, what is your opinion regarding the silence of the international community over the past several years and, of course, over the course of the past 4 days in particular? How has this, in your opinion, emboldened the Israeli regime in carrying out these attacks?
This international community we talk about are totally sold out in the pockets of the Zionist international cabal. The fact of the matter is, from Washington to London, to pretty much all of the other allied states to Zion Western interests, they're the ones that are usually called the international community. And they're all under the thumb of Zionist big money, big mafia, big politicians are under their control. It's something which is clearly demonstrable from the way that they use their lobby groups in the likes, places like London in Parliament. It's pretty obvious, even if you looked actually into the corporations which situate themselves around the City of London or in Wall Street. These forces have got their fingers in virtually every institutional, whether it's financial or otherwise, institution in the West. So to expect anything from the international community is a nonsense in itself. So what we're talking about is really a silence which is complicit, a silence which is actually been there literally since this conflict began. I've seen a change in that international community's voice as long as I've been living. That's the reality of it. So they are part and parcel of the problem. They are part and parcel of the terrorism. Their terrorism is a much more subtle one, quite clearly, but it, nonetheless, their hands are covered in blood as well. So I would say that forget the international community. No imperialist power has ever been pushed out. No colonial power has ever been pushed out of their subjugation of the people unless the people rise up themselves. And what we're seeing is that increasingly the military aspect of the Palestinian resistance is being enhanced. And who's doing that? Iran. The resistance front in the Middle East, West Asia, whatever you like to call it, they have now activated and they're saying, look, enough is enough. We're going to literally supply arms, train, and develop the Palestinian resistance so that it can actually stand up for itself and liberate its people. Because there's no other solution. There's no way that these kind of extremist, violent Zionists will be thrown out of Israel unless there's a military resistance. Number two, unless they have their economic, strings cut. Those economic strings come from America primarily with that $4 billion plus. But there's a hidden amount which comes from the Zionist money mafia as well. Unless these two things are done, unless you cut their money supply, cut their access to resources and military supplies, and unless you're able to put up a genuine stiff resistance, the Zionists have no reason to leave Israel. But the reality is now that they're being given every reason. Islamic Jihad has been targeted because they've been the most stoic in terms of conducting a military campaign against the Israeli tyranny. And I don't think that's going to be a reverse now. I think it's going to continue. And Israel is looking, as Ayatollah Khamenei has said several times, at packing its bags up and, basically being wiped off the international map within the next 20, 25 years.
Thank you very much, Saeed Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator from Islamabad. Also, we had with us Tim Anderson, director of the Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies in Beirut, and our correspondent Ashraf Shannon joining us live from Gaza City. We will be in touch with our correspondent Ashraf Shannon to get more updates as the situation in Gaza City has intensified, with more rockets being fired towards the besieged Gaza Strip and, of course, the large number of civilian casualties there. Immigration advocates have filed a legal challenge against the U.S. administration rule that restricts access to asylum at the border with Mexico. The advocates are represented by the American Civil Liberties Union. They filed the motion before a federal judge in California. This aims to reopen an existing lawsuit over similar restrictions implemented by former President Donald Trump. The motion also aims to update the case to a new target and the new regulation issued by the incumbent President Joe Biden. The new rule is part of Biden's policies to address a possible rise in the number of immigrants to the U.S. This comes as COVID curbs, known as Title 42, ended at midnight on Thursday. Tens of thousands of migrants have already crossed the U.S.-Mexico border. Washington says it wants to curtail illegal immigration. Rights groups, however, say the policies violate human rights. The European Union's foreign policy towards Africa is slated as the humanitarian situation in Sudan deteriorates. There have been calls in the European Parliament for the bloc to provide asylum to Sudanese refugees amid heavy clashes between rival military forces. Jerome Hughes reports.
EU leaders are accused of failing the people of Sudan. The 27-nation bloc's weak foreign policy in Africa has allowed tensions to develop into chaos and carnage, according to some legislators in the European Parliament.
We must understand that hoping for the best is not sufficient. If we do not engage constructively and in a timely, effective manner, we will always need to run for cover when it is already too late.
It's the Rapid Support Forces versus the Sudanese Armed Forces. Rival generals, once allies, are battling it out.
The West were happy to legitimize a de facto military dictatorship because this is the arrangement that has served our financial interests and the interests of the IMF and the World Bank for many years.
In the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, hundreds of people have been killed and thousands injured. The situation in Darfur and other regions is also dire. When it comes to African nations, the West is accused by critics of only ever having been interested in pillaging natural resources, such as gold, diamonds and oil. At least 450,000 people have been forced to flee their homes in Sudan since war broke out on April 15th. Foreign powers are competing for influence in Sudan because of its position on the map. Apparently, the EU has taken its eye off the ball.
Don't make the mistake to only focus on the war in Ukraine. All kinds of leaders seize the opportunity because they see the European Union as a soft power entity.
The EU has opened its doors to millions of Ukrainian refugees. The bloc is being criticized for not providing safe routes for those escaping Sudan. Some commentators claim Washington is pouncing on the crisis with the aim of implementing ideological changes by removing Islam from Sudan's constitution. Once again, the US is accused of interference to try and further its own agenda. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من، این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزای لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. 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 کتاب الله.
Eight-year defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran. Tehran.
Iran Today.
The phrase critical technologies usually implies that some technologies are so fundamental to global security or so highly enabling of economic growth for future development that the capability to produce these technologies must become a high priority for any nation that desires to be among the difference makers of the world in the coming decades. Iran has long been considered among the leading countries in producing science and generating new products and technologies in the world, according to the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, ASPI. ASPI's new critical technology tracker reported Iran ranked as one of the top five countries in six of the 44 technologies tracked and ninth in the overall ranking to predict the top 10 future global powers. One surprising finding of the report is that the Islamic Republic of Iran stands among the top 10 science and technology superpowers, ranking higher than countries like Japan, Canada, France, and Russia to secure its place in the top five in six critical technologies.
There has been an exponential growth in knowledge-based firms and startups in Iran, which is the result of heightened domestic demand combined with the multiplication of technology incubators and accelerators since the country first launched its public innovative centers. By 2020, 49 innovative accelerators had been established with private equity, and 113 innovative centers had been set up in partnership with science parks and major universities. Also, the government has been encouraging startups to diversify into knowledge-based fields. For a closer look on this issue, please stay with us on this edition of Iran Today. In the most recent ranking of the world's top 10 technological superpowers by the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, ASPI, Iran ranked 9th overall in the ranking to forecast the top 10 future world powers and was one of the top 5 nations in 6 of the 44 technologies examined by ASPI's new critical technology tracker, followed closely by Japan 4 and Canada 4. Russia, Singapore, Saudi Arabia, France, Malaysia, and the Netherlands are in the top five for one or two technologies.
A number of other countries, including Spain and Turkey, regularly make the top 10 countries but aren't in the top 5. Moreover, Islamic Republic ranked 4th behind China and the United States and far ahead of Japan, Italy, and the United Kingdom when the number of publications, citations, and the Hirsch Index for cutting-edge aviation engines, including hypersonic engines, were examined. We paid a visit to the Renop Therapeutics, a center for stem cell and regenerative medicine. Dr. Khodami, the founder of this center, took us to the intricate world of vaccine production.
In the field of biotechnology, a lot of good work has been done in Iran in the last 2 or 3 decades, and many companies have been active in these fields. Leading and best-selling medicine in the world have been released in this field, which have been the treatment of many diseases such as insulin resistance, growth hormone, and antibodies that are used to treat cancer. Many of these items are being produced completely domestically in Iran.
According to ASPI, Iran is also ranked among the top 4 nations in the world for research into smart materials, biofuels, and new technologies that are entering the market and may change the course of the business.
We are active also in the very new field of mRNA technology. Our first product was Coronavaccine. Phase 1 of its clinical trial is over. We have literally built a biotechnology ecosystem in which we are totally capable of quickly doing in Iran the things that companies like Pfizer and Moderna do. We have managed to bypass all the barriers and phases and reach the end products and bring it to a stage where it can be injected into humans. This shows the perfection of the quality of Iranian products. This native capability is valuable.
For many years, Iran has been regarded as one of the world's leading producers of science. The Critical Technology Tracker, on the other hand, has gone beyond basic research to focus on critical performance indicators of scientific and technological capabilities, identifying nations that have an advantage in this metric across the 44 technologies. Dr. Mohammadi, head of the National Institute of Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology, welcomed us for a conversation on Iran's achievements in the field of genetic engineering.
We have the largest variety of biotechnology products in Asia. This has also been realized by our own scientists. The second point is that we have the largest biotech factories in the region in Iran. This has also been achieved under sanctions, which means we have reached here by relying on our own youth. When you have a biotechnology factory, it means that you have products. It means you have technology. It means you are exporting these products to dozens of countries. During the time of Corona, the Islamic Republic of Iran produced many Corona vaccines. Espigen was produced by a private Iranian company. Our Fakhra or Noura vaccines are products of our own scientists, made by our own people. During the outbreak of coronavirus, 7 platforms were developed by Iranian scientists, while in Germany, only 1 platform was created to produce vaccines.
Islamic Republic's presence in this realm, despite decades of economic and technology sanctions, shows that the world of knowledge is porous and the U.S. West Bloc sanctions have failed to keep the Iranian people from becoming participants in the global knowledge economy. Iran has a history of developing and sharing knowledge and is constantly working hard to improve its technological sectors. The government is investing a high amount of resources in producing technological advancements.
In this very same research institute, we have medical biotech, agricultural biotech, livestock biotech, environmental biotech, and virus and bacteria biotech. Each of these has produced numerous products. We have found the ability of gene therapy in the field of health, and we're doing it. This is the most expensive product in the world. Its price is about $3.8 million. We have now achieved gene therapy technology. We have recently announced the production of a recent product called CD19 targeted CAR T cells. We have entered the field of thalassemia. We have entered the field of hemophilia, and we have reached the clinical phase. In agricultural products, also, we have produced products that are resistant to drought and cold. All these mean that Iran is competing with the world, exactly at the border of knowledge.
Beginning in ancient times, Iran has been a center of scientific achievements and was often the conduit of knowledge from China and India in the east to Greece and Rome in the west. Persian-speaking scholars have had an active role in furthering knowledge in science and technology, such as chemistry, biology, cosmology, botany, anatomy, mathematics, engineering, and architecture. Iran has made considerable advances in science and technology through education and training, despite illegal U.S.-led sanctions on almost all areas of research. Currently, the growth of Iran's scientific output is reported to be the fastest in the world.
این یک حقیقت رو نشون میده. ایرانی‌ها دانش دوستن.
This shows a fact that Iranians are lovers of knowledge and seek knowledge. I've seen some European countries, for example, a person gets a diploma and says that it is enough. He's no longer interested in getting higher academic degrees. He goes to the job market and McDonald's and other places. Iranians are not like that at all. Iranians are very interested in entering higher education and gaining scientific growth and seeking knowledge. This is a very good feature in Iranian society. We should make the best out of this feature. Iranian intelligence, along with this passion for learning and knowledge, can provide huge changes in the future of our economy and health. Iran is a country that has talented young people.
Another interesting part of the ASPI report is not simply that it identifies the position of countries in what can be considered a race to the Olympic Games in science and technology, but on the concept behind Tehran's rise as a global power. It is the vision of Islamic Republic's self-reliance, from universities and institutions to the industry with state support. It is the same all-around vision of self-reliance, about not only buying technology and investing in the industry, but also setting up the necessary institutions that can support and develop such technology. Iranian leadership, like in China or India in earlier times, talked of self-reliance and the Made in Iran development model. They are adamant about the fact that it is not only money as capital that develops a nation, but knowledge as capital that is the foundation of a self-reliant modern industry.
RSV is another respiratory virus that we are working on it today, and we are close to making the required vaccine. I hope it will be produced this year. We have also flu vaccine, HIV vaccine, special vaccines of different countries. We can and do produce all of these. For example, leishmania is a problem of our country and it exists in several other countries as well. Or for example, the Crimean Congo fever causes casualties in our country every year in the livestock industry. So far, no vaccine has been produced for this in the world, but we can produce it with this technology. On the other hand, in the field of cancer treatment, we have another medicine class called Rhenopticines, which are for cancer treatment. There are molecules that are injected into the solid tumor tissue and then secrete a hormone that causes white blood cells to invade the tumor tissue and recognize the tumor tissue as a foreign object and destroys it.
Despite the limitations in funds, facilities, and international collaborations, Iranian scientists have been very productive in several fields, such as synthetic biology, artificial intelligence technologies, intelligent materials and biofuel science, robotics, pharmacology, pharmaceutical chemistry, and organic and polymer chemistry.
In fact, we should have a balanced growth in science and technology. That is, if we grow in one area and we cannot grow enough in other areas, this is not very desirable in the world. The export of a single product is an index. The production of articles and publications is an index. The number of researchers is an index, and the number of university professors and the number of students, all of these must grow in a balanced manner. We have grown well in some of these areas. In the field of nanotechnology, we ranked 4th in the publication of scientific articles. In stem cells, we ranked 13th. And in the field of biotechnology, we ranked 10th in the world.
Iranian biophysicists, especially molecular biophysicists, have gained international reputation since the 1990s. Tissue engineering and research on biomaterials have just started to emerge in biophysics departments that's grabbing the attention of international experts in this field.
در زمینه تخصصی خودمون تا جایی که تخصص من اجازه میده دربارش نظر بدم. در
زمینه As far as my expertise allows me to comment in this field, Iran is progressing in the field of biotechnology at the pace of the growth of science in the world. This action has been started by science and technology professors for many years. Iran has excelled in the production of biotechnology drugs in the region and exports these drugs to various countries. This is admirable. In the field of mRNA technology, which is one of the most up-to-date manifestations of biotechnology, thank God we started on time and we are not behind the world at all.
Currently, Iran aims for a national goal of self-sustainment in all scientific arenas. Many individual Iranian scientists are involved in this revival. For this purpose, a comprehensive scientific plan has been devised based on over 50,000 documents. It comprises 224 scientific projects that will be implemented by the year 2025. This plan includes vision, goals, monitoring and evaluation indicators, priorities, scenarios, policies, strategies, and the role of the government in knowledge management. Dr. Dehqanzadeh, the scientific manager at Renop Therapeutics, tells us about the inhumane sanctions against the Iranian nation.
In fact, the ASPI Center's report on Iran's rankings, as far as I know, is based on the number of articles. For several years, the number of scientific articles published by Iranian scientists has been very impressive and is a good benchmark. Besides these articles, of course, we need to be careful that we should not limit ourselves to publishing articles only. We must use this energy to develop and finally solve the problems in the country. I mean, we need to move towards putting these articles into practice.
Definitely, when you try in a field and have outputs, these outputs have an effect. This means that these articles definitely have an effect in the society to promote health, to promote food security, and to grow the economy. Iran's growth in science has never been limited to publication of scientific essays. If these things happen, we can claim that our science has been able to serve society. Researchers and scientists in Iran are working with this model.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
So how seriously do you think we should take the ASPI tracker? Can we really measure science and technology outputs? Experts say that any science and technology tracker can be criticized on methodological grounds. They inquire that are these indicators the only ones to be considered? How biased are the indicators to the outcomes that the researchers may want? Is the choice of narrative biasing the results towards a more particular twisted purpose? These questions are and should be asked of any such study. But according to an independent scholar, it is difficult to fault the broad outcomes of this recent ASPI report. Meaning the results across the board on a range of topics do show trends that are difficult to contest on a scientific basis. For instance, there is just too much independent evidence that the United States and the West are losing ground to China and even India, as indicated in the report. Indeed, the world is becoming multipolar, not just in the economy, but also in knowledge generation.
The important point is that the West is facing a reality regarding Iran, and that is Iran is among the top countries in the world in the fields of science and technology. They cannot see Iran at this level of science and technology, and they can't tolerate it. In these cases, they try to admit Iran's growth in their reports like ASPI, but they don't see it as a positive aspect. The goal is to create the impression among the people of the world under the Iranophobia project that all these achievements are a threat because they are in the position of the government of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Naturally, if we know the global arrogance and its domination system well, and if we are familiar with its politics in playing with the world's public opinion, we can see that they are manipulating the world's public opinion easily.
For example, in the field of lipid nanoparticles, since the mRNA formulation technology is completely new, we must note that the knowledge of both nanotechnology and biotechnology sciences is necessary for it. We have a chemistry group and a formulation group, both of which we develop by ourselves, both the lipids needed for formulation and the devices needed to do the related work. This knowledge has strengthened us in various aspects and is not limited to mRNA.
The study, which was funded by the U.S. State Department, by the way, found that the United States was often second-ranked in that race, although it led global research in high-performance computing, quantum computing, and vaccines. Their data set revealed that there is a large gap between China and the U.S. and the leading two countries and everyone else, it stressed. Western democracies are losing the global technological competition, including the race for scientific and research breakthroughs, the report concluded, calling for greater research investment by those governments.
The number of cases that could have been challenging for the Iranian nation due to the inhumane sanctions of the West are countless. But in addition to these sanctions, we found a need in our profession for devices that are not yet commercially available in the world, so they cannot be purchased. We manufacture these devices ourselves. On the other hand, there are raw materials that are specific to this technology, and we were not able to import them due to sanctions. We produce all these today. That is, in the beginning, we had nothing. We held meetings, we did lots of research, the methods of making devices, and the way of producing raw materials, all of them were progressed step by step by domestic scientists, and finally, we brought it to production. For example, several very important enzymes are used to produce mRNA, none of which existed in Iran, but we were able to produce all these enzymes from scratch using recombinant protein technology by very creative domestic scientists.
ASPI's critical technology tracker shows that for some technologies, all of the world's top 10 leading research institutions are based in China, collectively generating 9 times more high-impact research papers than the second-ranked country, most often the U.S. China's global lead extends to 37 of the 44 technologies tracked, with the country excelling in defense and space-related technologies.
An article on an Australian IT and telecommunications news website claims that the ASPI report is a hawkish line on China and Iran in a bid to hype up the fear index to make it effectively possible for its financial sponsors to sell more weapons to countries in the Asia-Pacific and West Asia region. Iranian political insiders confirm that Westerners often create false fears to achieve their hidden agenda, such as the Iran as nuclear threat narrative indicates. That said, Iran confirms its scientific progress and achievement while emphasizing the peaceful nature of its macro policies and defense doctrine.
The ASPI's alleged stance against China is believed to be linked to its source of funding, a lot of which reportedly come from defense contractors and foreign governments. According to geopolitical experts, ASPI pumps out a one-sided pro-American view of the world and is seen by some as the architect of the China threat theory in Australia. In this regard, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Hua Changying said a while back that ASPE has such a strong ideological bias and the institute is actually spearheading anti-China forces while its academic credibility has been seriously questioned.
Considering that the ruling discourse of the Islamic Republic of Iran is basically anti-arrogance and anti-imperialist, naturally the scientific and technological development of this country will challenge the West from two perspectives. One is that the entry of anti-capitalist discourse into the field of these sciences breaks the monopoly of these sciences in the hands of the West. You can see an example of this claim in Iran's nuclear issue. On the other hand, this is actually sending a message to the world and to the free nations that Iran has been able to reach such a level of science and technology despite all the sanctions due to its resistance. So, this can be a lesson for them that standing in the face of the world's arrogance and the U.S. can never stop a nation's growth and prosperity forever.
Furthermore, it's been reported that ASPE Executive Director Peter Jennings is a frequent contributor to Australian media, producing articles which clearly embody a Cold War mentality. When the think tank was founded in 2001, it was funded by the Australian government through the Department of Defense. However, it was taking about $311,000 from the U.S. State Department to track Chinese research collaborations with Australian universities, according to an article by the Australian Financial Review. Although the exact number is yet to be verified, the AFR article revealed some more recent sources of ASPE funding, including NATO, the U.S. State Department, and the U.K. Foreign and Commonwealth Office. The list also includes the Embassy of Japan, said the article. Defense contractors such as Lockheed Martin, BAE Systems, Northrop Grumman, Thales, and Raytheon are also among the ASPE sponsors, along with some technology companies. This is an old strategy, said the article. It was used by the U.S. in the West Asia and still is.
شما اگر شاهد باشید در بازه‌های زمانی مختلف از سوی گزارشگران
In different periods of time, international reporters have clearly stated this point that sanctions against the Islamic Republic of Iran, especially in the areas of food, medicine and infrastructure, are actually against human rights. For example, last year, Mrs. Alan Dohen came to Iran as the special rapporteur for Human Rights of the United Nations, prepared a report and condemned the sanctions of the United States and its Western allies in sanctioning Iran, because their sanctions have practically deprived Iranian citizens of their natural rights.
When it comes to sanctions, of course people will face many problems. For example, they suffer from sanctions on medicine. This policy is completely inhumane, but as I said, these will not last long. That is, in the long term, all these problems will make us move towards solving them domestically. And this movement causes growth in various fields of science and technology.
A former Australian diplomat, Jeff Raby, said the ASPE lacks integrity and brings shame to Australia in being an agent of war. Think of how insidious that is. When the U.S. wages a war, the military-industrial complex benefits.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Please do tune in same time next week and each week after. Don't forget to leave your comments and topic requests. Till next time, take care.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
علم فقه از علوم شریفه اسلامی است.
فقه or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant factor.
امامت یک اصل زنده است در تاریخ اسلام.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program, Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Hashimi Nejad. Please stay tuned. A jealous person is so much dangerous that Allah in the Holy Quran warns Prophet Muhammad to take refuge in Allah from the evil intentions of a jealous person. Of course, the jealous person is not only a stranger, rather it could be a person from your close ones like family members or relatives. The clear examples in the Holy Quran are Abel and Cain and Prophet Yusuf's brothers.
اگر دیدی انسانی حسود است با او دوستی نکن.
Leave your friendship with a jealous person. The jealous person is one day envious about others and the other day about you. As the famous Persian poet Saeb Tabrizi states, There is no credit even in the brothers, since Yusuf fell into the well by the hands of his own brothers. Thus, we must leave companionship with a jealous person. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Hashim Nejad. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.